You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is Last of the Roman Punks from the Love and Roman Punk Collection, Part 2. Lamia. Noun, plural, lamias or lamiae. 1. Greek mythology. A monster represented as a serpent, with the head and breasts of a woman that ate children and sucked the blood from men. 2. A female vampire, demon or sorceress. 3. The eponymous heroine of Lamia, an unpublished novel by Mary Wollstonecraft Godwin, 1797 to 1815. Lady Lamia Worthington had silver blood and could take the shape of a woman or a snake. She fed on the blood of a series of young husbands and gave birth to a monstrous daughter who literally consumed her. 4. A really completely not fucking mythological creature, which survived until the 21st century, when the last two in existence attempted to feed upon a teenage boy and were wiped from the face of the earth by my nan, Clea Majora Jackson, and a man she only ever referred to in her stories as Julius. In my family, we call him the Monster Killer. Right, I said finally, licking whiskey from my fingers because I didn't want to waste a drop. You have my attention. Let's start with an easy one, shall we? The items that were stolen from my nan's house this week. Any chance you know anything about that? That depends on your definition of theft, said my darling ex. Your nan has been illegally hoarding some important historical artifacts, Sebastian. All those weapons, jewellery, quite valuable ancient pieces, many of them. But the worst crime of all. Scholars have known of the existence of Agrippina's family history for centuries, but it was presumed destroyed. You can't keep a book like that in a box under the bed. It should be in a museum. So that's what you've done, of course, I said flatly. Handed it all into a museum for the sake of posterity. Oh, I will, Eloise promised, eyes wide. Eventually. She shifted and I saw the glint of a dull greened-with-age necklace that I'd last seen in my nan's safe. It was a depiction of three Julias, Agrippina, Drusilla and Livilla, sisters of Caligula. It was precious to my family. It belonged to my cousin Mercy now, not this bitch I'd once loved. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Never mind the necklace. Most of what she'd taken had no value but family nostalgia. But the book was dynamite. Mercy and Blake were going to kill me. Some things are too bloody dangerous to allow out in public, Ellie. Didn't do a very good job of guarding it then, did you? She said prettily. Brian was staring at the floor, wallowing in his own embarrassment. This wasn't just my ex out for some kind of twisted revenge against my family. This was serious. What exactly do you plan to do? I asked. Eloise had never looked so beautiful. I plan to become immortal, darling, and I want you to stand at my side. I laughed. Immortality. You know who doesn't want immortality? Immortals. My nan hung out with a 2,000-year-old bloke for most of her life. And the message she got from it? Not the lifestyle choice of the future. Getting old is what we do. It's what makes us human. Tell him, Brian, Eloise said, back to being the Ice Queen. He looked at me, and now that I was paying attention, I could see how tired he was. Therese is sick, he said, and I heard despair in every word. I'm sorry to hear that, I said, trying not to get distracted by the thought of bubbly Therese and her two awesome children. I understand. You want to do everything you can, but this isn't on the list. It's not an acceptable option for anyone. A good man fought for 40 times his natural lifespan to rid the world of monsters. There's no reason big or important enough to bring them back. You'd do it if it was Mercy, said Eloise. You'd do it in a second. I thought of my brilliant, brave cousin. She made detective before she was 26. She's devoted her life to being a fucking hero, and she's the last member of our family who believes in justice and love and all that crap. She's the best person I know. If Mercy tried to turn herself into a Lamia, I said, in a calm, patient voice, I'd put a bullet in her head. If she was dying and I was the one trying to turn her into a monster, she'd be the one handy with the bullet. I'm really sorry, said Eloise with a sigh. It's far too late for bullets. But there is still time for you to change your mind. I hope you do. You're a little old to be food. I could hear my heartbeat hammering against my chest. I felt the change in the room like a sigh or a hiss. Over there by the bar, I could see the surly waitress arguing with customers. They leaned in towards her, three of them, beautiful women with flat, distant faces. In this light, their eyes seemed silver. How had I not noticed before that every customer in the bar was blonde and female? I stared back at the wine carafe, and then back to two people I'd once thought of as family. It's in the wine, isn't it? Lamia blood. Of all the stupid talismans for my Nan to keep. But she kept every fragment that had belonged to Julius the Monster Killer. How do you dispose of Lamia blood safely? Here's a tip. Don't spike a whole bar's worth of wine with those devious silver droplets. Unless you want a zeppelin full of silver-blooded vampiric women soaring over your city. Apparently that was exactly what my Ellie wanted. The waitress screamed. As I turned in her direction, she swung a long-necked brandy bottle around in an arc, smashing it over the head of a Roman matrona, who was wrapped around her like a predatory squid, arms everywhere. The other waitresses, the blonde ones, gathered around, not helping her. Their eyes were silver too. I guess she'd been sulking too much to drink the wine. "Don't fight it," said Eloise, moving to my side. She had a cup of that damned grape juice in her hand, holding out to me like there was a chance in hell I was going to take it from her. "We're changing the world, Seb. You can be a part of it. With you as the queen of everything, I suppose." She laughed, a low, familiar sound, and I could hear the change in her already. "Of course. Sorry, love, but I walked away from that world once already." The waitress was fighting them off as best she could, with a broken bottle in each hand now, but they closed in on her. A dozen or more circled the bar, and the others were awakening, one by one, on every couch in the room. She was the only one who counted as food. Her and me. And I still had Eloise hanging on my arm, marking me out as company property. If I gave up Ellie's idea of protection, I'd have a horde of glamorous vixens on my neck in under a minute. And while that kind of death might look good on paper, it lacked appeal right now. A hand brushed against my other arm and I jumped. It was Brian, looking wan and silvery. Not sure if the Lamia blood was agreeing with him like it was with Eloise, but I didn't have a lot of sympathy for the bloke right now. "Therese is going to be proud of you for setting off this epidemic, is she?" I snapped. I didn't have a choice. Stupidest sentence I've ever heard. My mind was racing ahead of my mouth. It was here, all of it, contained on a floating vessel. I'd read everything my Nan had kept on the bad old days of monsters under the bed, including her own notes on what she had witnessed in her lifetime. How do you kill Lamia? Fire, baby. Flame and swords. Was I up for that? I uncovered insurance fraud for a living. Was I capable of setting a whole fucking zeppelin alight? Dooming my ex-girlfriend and her brother? As well as the only other person in the bar who was still what I would call human? Was I strong enough to take us all down in flames? As I hesitated, the waitress punched one of the swarming blondes in the face, stabbed another in the arm with her broken bottle, then ran and locked herself in what was either a storage room or a large cupboard. I hoped for her sake there was a window and a really long rope ladder back there. "Hold him," said Eloise, and Brian's hands clamped around my wrists, pinning both arms behind my back. He was cool to the touch. I was struggling to remember Nan's stories, which always seemed so removed from relevance, plus all the vampire movies I'd ever seen. Keeping the details separate would probably save my life. Garlic, for instance, could be added to the list of things that were no help whatsoever. It was a hell of a long list. Eloise strode grandly to the centre of the room. She shook her hair back, enjoying the attention as the faux Romans turned to her, hissing their approval. "You all know me. You all made your choice. We are the future of this world." "Food," whispered one, and they all took up the call. "Food. Food." A whole lot of silver eyes were fixed on me. "He will remain intact for now," said my ex, making sure to stress the "for now" in case I was in any doubt about my impending doom. "I know you are hungry, my darlings, but think of it, in 20 minutes we will be setting down on the Opera House platform. So much real food, young food, board and available." The Opera House platform was on the roof of the largest shopping centre in the country. It was school holidays. Harry Potter and the Lost Generation was playing on an endless loop until midnight, and Lamia, I remembered now, had a particular taste for teenagers. Wonderful. We had to crash and burn before that. Hell, crashing into the platform and all the deaths that that might cause were small potatoes compared to what would happen if the Lamia were loosed on the world again. Julius was dead. There were no more legendary Roman heroes waiting to save the day for the rest of us mortals. There was just me. Eloise gestured wildly, enjoying the attention of her minions. "In honour of this momentous day, I shall take a new name worthy of your leader. From now on, I shall be known as Julia Agrippina Augusta Lamia." This time they hissed their approval so loudly it sounded like a freak hailstorm. "Bullshit," said a voice inside my head. It took me a few seconds to realise it wasn't just my internal thoughts. "Who the fuck are you? You wouldn't believe me if I told you." The voice was older, female and smug, oddly familiar. "Nan?" "Don't be ridiculous," she said haughtily from somewhere between my cerebral cortex and my migraine. "I am the original Julia Agrippina, daughter of Germanicus." Now it was my turn to think. "Bullshit." "I assure you, young man." "Why aren't you speaking Latin?" "Because I'm using your brain. It requires use of your own limited vocabulary." She sounded impatient. "This will never work if you don't believe me. Pay attention." My head was suddenly full of her. I was overwhelmed by a musty montage of ancient Rome, the smells and the tastes. In the space of a few seconds, I tasted honey for the first time, swam through salt water to kill a man I hated, screamed as a baby squeezed its way out of me, and stuck a bronze gladius through the body of a dragon. When those seconds were over, I was left sweating and gasping for breath, still held tight by Brian and believing every word that the witch inside my head had spoken. "Why me?" I stared across the room at the artist formerly known as Eloise. "She's the one wearing your necklace." "Have you seen the inside of that woman's brain?" "Intimately." "I'd rather die. Besides, you will be far more useful." "If you're the Agrippina who wrote that book my nan looked after all those years, you're just as much Lamia as my ex-girlfriend. The whole imperial family was polluted with silver blood. I'm not stupid." "That silver blood was the shame of my family," she said crisply, sounding more like a stern teacher I had in grade 5 than the ghost of a long-dead empress. "My sisters and I trained young Julius and cursed him to be our hands, once we were gone from the earth, to be the redemption of the Caesars. He has gone to his peace too soon, and that leaves you and I to sweep up the crumbs." I only saw Julius the Monster Killer once, when I was 8 or so. He slayed a manticore in front of my brother Blake, my cousin Mercy and me. I'd never seen anything cooler in my life. After that, I begged Nan for the stories and she let them out one at a time, reluctantly, like they were pieces of something she had no right to share. When I was an adult, she told the stories differently. She told me of his sacrifice, the man who lived 2,000 years, picking off the monsters of the world one by one, the last of the Caesars, bastard son of a fucking evil family. Towards the end, when her memory couldn't be trusted, when the nurses didn't even like her to make a cup of tea on her own because she'd forget the tea bag or scald herself with the hot water, Nan told me the stories a third time, and the details were note perfect, even as everything else went fuzzy around her. She couldn't remember whether I was Seb or Blake, but she knew the 5 pressure points to go for if you needed to slay a griffin. I listened to her then because it calmed her down, to think that someone was going to remember Julius and the family he had come from. "I'm glad your mothers didn't call you Julia," she said once to Mercy. "There's a power in that name. The Julias were warriors, soldiers and heroes, mad, cursed and doomed, every one of them." Now I had one of them in my head. Julia Agrippina, bitch of Rome, murderer of emperors, part Lamia, part werewolf, part nagging old cow. She wasn't just in my head. She was in my veins. I was glad Brian was still holding my hands behind me because it was like I couldn't even remember how to walk in this big, clumsy male body. This had better be temporary, or I was gonna have to punch someone. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. See you next time.